from KQED.
From the Sacramento studios of KQED Public Radio, I'm Dave Iverson. When you drive from the Bay Area to Sacramento, you're always reminded of the importance of agriculture to our state. As a recent article in the San Francisco Chronicle noted, farming is a $37.5 billion business in California, employing some 800,000 people. But the number of people who make their living off the land may decline if current demographic trends hold. Right now, the average California farmer is approaching 60 years of age, and nearly a fifth of the state's farmers are 70 or older. Where will the next generation of farmers come from? What can be done to ensure California's farming future? That's our topic next on Forum, after this. From the Sacramento studio of KQED Public Radio, I'm Dave Iverson. When Rich Collins was in high school in the 1970s, he worked at a restaurant. One night, the chef made endive, which Collins heard then cost $4 a pound. It sparked an idea. 40 years later, that bit of green is still central to Rich Collins' life. He runs a farm that produces endive more than any place else in America. So why am I talking about endive? Well, here's why. Rich Collins is also 52 years old, which makes him young, as farmers go. It's about 6 years younger than the average age of farmers in the state of California. California agriculture is, in a sense, going from green to gray. And farmers like Rich Collins and others are concerned about where the next generation of farmers are going to come from. So in this hour form, we want to take up that topic, the future of farming in California. Who's going to do it? What are the obstacles for young people who want to make their living off the land? Where, in other words, will our endive and all things green continue to come from in the future? Joining us, Rich Collins, farmer and owner of California Vegetable Specialties that produces all that endive, also a partner in and owner of Bridgeway Farms. Rich, good morning.
Morning. Thanks for having us.
Happy to have you here, too. Emma Torbert is just down the road from Rich. She is at the Cloverleaf at Bridgeway Farms, grows vegetables, melons, tomatoes, green beans, basil, and is also a postgraduate fellow at the Agricultural Sustainability Institute at the University of California, Davis. Emma, good morning.
Thanks.
And in between is Craig McNamara. He's president of the California State Board of Food and Agriculture, also an olive and walnut grower at Sierra Orchards, and president and founder of the Center for Land-Based Learning. Craig McNamara, good morning.
Good morning, Dave. It's great to be here.
Happy to have all of you here to talk about this topic. Craig, start us out on this sort of graying of California farmers. I read that the average age of California farmers is right about your age, right around 60, and that 20% of all California farmers are actually 70 or older. How concerned are you about who's going to farm in the future?
I'm very concerned about it, Dave. It's something that's so important to California and to our nation. So at one end, we've got the grain. Rich, do I have any gray hairs? I don't think so.
A skosh.
But nationally, it's a very significant problem. And the transition of land that will be occurring in the next decade will be very much concerned to our nation. Our Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, has said that we need 100,000 new farmers in the United States, and we need them soon. So that's the challenge. And I hope today that we'll talk about the things that the three of us are doing and that we're doing across the state to ensure that a new generation of farmers is being trained. And you notice I didn't use the word young, because I think there's tremendous opportunities for young people out of high school, out of college, but also second and third career people that are looking for a very satisfying career in agriculture.
Emma Torbert, you're the youngest person in the room, in your 30s. What drew you to want to make this your profession?
I guess when I started farming in the middle of college, during I took summers off and I farmed, and I have always loved science and also the environment. And farming, for me, I could use all branches of science, biology, chemistry. There's also marketing. There's all different kinds of parts of your brain that you have to use when you farm.
So it's sort of a full body, full mind profession?
Mm-hmm. And then I was very interested in the environment, and a lot of my internships in environmental science, we were always throwing away pipettes and throwing away the Petri dishes. And in farming, you are composting everything. Everything gets used, and I liked that cycling.
And what was the biggest obstacle for you to get into farming? Because that's part of what seems to be part of the difficulty here is, as Craig was suggesting, there's just problems, for example, just getting access to land.
Yeah, there's a lot of obstacles to farming. I wanted to start farming about 10 years ago, and I've had to work. I did a number of apprenticeships. I quickly figured out I wasn't going to have my own farm by apprenticing because I wasn't going to make enough money for the capital costs. So you have to work at it for a long time. You can also, the way that we're doing it now, we're not having a lot of capital costs up front. And so there's also ways to start earlier, too.
And your land actually is something that you are leasing from Rich Collins, right? So you're connected in that way. Why was that something that you wanted to do, Rich? Is that part of what you see as being the role of people who are farming in their middle and later years to be able to open the doors up to people like Emma?
Absolutely. My wife, Shelley, and I have been really blessed by the possibility recently of purchasing this farm, Bridgeway Farms, on Highway 80 near UC Davis. And 30 years ago when we started, we were taken under the wing of a mentor, similar to the same person that helped Craig get started in farming many years ago by the name of Tom Lum, who was a very, very large row crop farmer in the Dixon area. And at the time I showed up to start my five-acre venture with him, he was farming about 5,000 acres. So, but a five-acre venture with a 5,000-acre operation takes a lot of time. And Ton was very, very, very generous in his time and teaching and accommodation to us as young starting farmers. And we wanted to just play it forward.
Is that part of what is changing and part of what can open up the doors to the next generation of farmers? Or as you're suggesting also, Craig, the idea of people taking it on perhaps as a second career, that it doesn't have to be gargantuan? I tend to think of California farming as being big, you know, thousands of acres. But is that some of what's changing now and that's what can provide opportunity? That you don't need thousands in order to make a living?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a large gamut of operations in California, but generally speaking, starting out, unless you're from an established farming operation or a family that has the land, generally speaking, you're going to start out small, which is a logical and rational way to start as well.
And can you make money that way, Craig McNamara?
Absolutely. And remember, today and forward, we're going to need urban edge farmers. We've got urban areas.
Meaning what?
Well, the areas around our urban areas that are constantly growing. If you look at Davis or Sacramento, those cities were formed on the best land in the universe, Mediterranean climate. We've got water, air, sunshine. And as those communities grow, they are growing out onto the most vital lands. Well, we can put buffers around those lands. And internally in cities like Davis, we have open space that is available for a new crop of farmers. And they may be urban edge. They may be rooftop. The skill set will be different. And I want to go back to one thing that Rich said. We shared the same mentor. Hmm. And without Ton Lum, I couldn't be in this chair today. Hmm. His gift of time and expertise and learning was so valuable. And that's the give back that Rich is referring to. And on our farming operation, Toby Hastings is doing a similar thing that Emma is doing. You asked, is it viable? With the sweat equity that Toby's put into the land and the restaurant relationships that he's developed in San Francisco and Sacramento, it's incredibly rewarding and incredibly financially viable.
And are you making a go of it, Emma Torbert, as you start out in this career?
Well, we just had our first year, and typically the first year on a farm is not the most financially profitable. So we broke even our first year, which actually a number of my friends that have started farming said that was an accomplishment. But it definitely takes a number of years to build up the salary to pay yourselves.
So what do you most need? Full-time. Let's say that at this point in my life, I'm tired of doing radio and I want a farm. Not likely, but what do you need? What do you need to get going? Where do you start?
Dave, what you need is the California Farm Academy. This is something that are launching at the Center for Land-Based Learning in Winters, and it will be a training program for exactly you or Emma or Rich or myself. It will give you a 6-month in-class education about all the things that you need to learn about farming, farm plans, cropping patterns, pest management, water management. And then at the conclusion of that, we'll put you into a 6-month incubator program on the farm,
huh,
where you can try out your Brussels sprouts or your bell peppers or whatever crop it is that you want to begin. So first of all, you're going to need training. And then you're going to need what Emma and Rich have said, which is finance and credit. You may not need land in terms of purchase. I think there's viable lands that will be made available to you.
And what about the credit part of this? As I understand it, one of the obstacles right now is for young farmers, people like Emma, they're somewhat constrained by existing rules, and that there is this expectation that you have to have had X amount of experience and you have to have demonstrated that you've made so much money. What has to change in that way to sort of open up the purse strings a little bit more in terms of credit availability?
Well, the
Rich Collins,
when we started, there was no credit available to us, basically. And I would really counsel younger farmers to strive to develop a strategy to start without the need for credit, because it is such a burden. It adds yet another element of risk. Now, there's a lot of trade-offs, of course, involved in that. But I actually started farming with a $1,983 student loan that I received at UC Davis 6 weeks before I graduated. and luckily, I also married the patron saint of patience who had a job and a salary, and I did not. So we bootstrapped it. And I think that's pretty important. It's very easy to dump in a lot of money initially into a lot of overhead-type costs. They're probably not advisable.
Do you both, Emma and Craig, do you both concur that you shouldn't – I think of this as being like a heavily capital-invested profession, that you need a lot to get going. Not true?
I see both sides. I apprenticed on a farm where the farmer definitely had that opinion and always was advising us that you can use loans to make your business much more successful, and if you use them strategically where you know you can pay them back. My grandfather was a farmer who grew up in the Great Depression. I have a lot of fear of loans because I just I don't own the land, so that's one less risk, but I worry about.
So you went into this without taking out a big amount of loans.
Right. I've been, as I said, working for 10 years to save up the money that I could start a farm.
So. Craig McNamara.
I think the model has changed. If you go back to the model that Rich and I worked when we were in our 20s and early 30s, you know, I don't think we can replicate that. It took me years of studying at UC Davis. It took me 3 years of apprenticing with Tan Lam, making mistakes, and then searching for land, borrowing millions of dollars. I just don't think we have the time or the financial capability of replicating that. Today, our farming operation, which is a moderate to large-scale organic operation on 450 acres, we have a credit line in the $500,000 or something like that. We still have all those operating loans, so it is a significant part of our portfolio. And Rich, in your business, it's I would say credit's a very important part of your business.
Absolutely.
So what we're talking about is a new wave, a new vision.
And why is that important? I mean, put in perspective the need for California generally and for the world, I guess, more absolutely globally, to have more people farm.
Well, I think it's critical as we grow from 7 billion to 9 billion people globally. Let's not just think of California and the United States. Let's think globally. And California is such a leader in providing our nation and our globe with the fresh fruits and vegetables that's required. And that is only going to be more intense. And as we face global climate change, as we face loss of farmlands and destruction of our wildlands, food production is going to be even more vital. I saw an incredible model in Havana, Cuba, a situation in 1990 when the Russians pulled out and Cuba was left with no diesel, no pesticides, no tractor parts. They had to reinvent agriculture, and they created in their urban areas, in their towers of residential buildings, incredibly productive food supplies for their local populations. We can do that here in Sacramento. We can do it in Detroit or LA or D.C.
Craig McNamara, president of the California State Board of Food and Agriculture, owner of Sierra Orchards. Does that mean, in a sense, then, Rich Collins, that the way to sort of feed the world is going to be done in small steps, small chunks of land, that the answer isn't big corporate farms necessarily? It's going to be kind of 1 acre at a time?
It's probably going to be a combination of various models, but certainly a young, spirited, energetic, well-trained farmer on a small amount of land can do an awful lot to contribute to the food system.
Emma Torber, as our young resident farmer in this discussion, I mean, did your friends and colleagues and fellow students, parents, siblings, whatever, think you were nuts to do this, or did they get it?
Yeah, there was people on both sides. My dad might still think I'm nuts, but I'd say in the Davis community, it's so supportive of farms, and they really want to see even more. You know, there's a number of farms in the area already, but they want to see more. And I'd say that that's probably our biggest asset as a farm, is how much the community supports us. I mean, just this, I have a farming partner, Sasha Klein, and just this winter we took on two new farming partners, Aubrey White and also Marisa Alcorta. So now we have four women farming on this farm, and there's just a lot of energy behind it. So,
and is there a need at this point, Craig McNamara, to kind of make that case and to provide a kind of sales pitch, if you will, for future farmers? And if so, how are you going about doing that?
Well, I think Secretary Vilsack made that pitch, and it's something that the three of us and Alba and Soilborn Farms here in Sacramento and across the nation were taking seriously. The Greenhorns is a great example of an organization coming out of the East Coast that has done a national film about the importance of beginning and young farmers. The pitch is there. We have the leader of the U.S. Agricultural Department making the pitch. We're making it with our California Farm Academy. It's really present.
And is it resonating? When you make this pitch, or when you talk to younger people, are people saying, oh, yeah, that sounds appealing to me?
Absolutely. The phone is literally ringing off the hook. We're beginning in February with our first crop of new beginning farmers. And for 20 spots, we've had over 30 or 40 applicants. And one of the important things, I think, is our focus on veterans. We, as a nation, send many young women and men across to fight our wars. Well, 50%, almost 50% of our military come from rural America. Hmm. And in California, many of those men and women are from Latino backgrounds. The gift of the connection of bringing our vets back home and reconnecting them to the land and to food systems and food production is a win.
Yeah. It's such an interesting point. I'm often struck when you see at the end of the PBS NewsHour, they'll run those very poignant little snapshots of people who have lost their lives serving America in Afghanistan or in Iraq. Almost always, they're from small towns across rural America. You mentioned the Agricultural Land-Based Training Association, ALBA, a moment ago, and Tony Serrano is joining us as well as part of this discussion. He's general manager there for ALBA Organics. Tony Serrano is someone who also came to this country as an immigrant, is Latino. I imagine you relate to what Craig McNamara just said about this providing an opportunity in a way that perhaps we haven't fully grasped before.
I do, absolutely. My parents actually started out that way as small farmers and immigrants, and back when small farms were still thriving and eventually grew into a large operation and failed, and then went to work for somebody else like myself, and now it's very important to see that small farms are beginning to show up on the radar again, and I'm glad to be a part of that.
And how specifically will immigrant populations in particular, or people who are from Latino backgrounds, make a difference? Is that part of where the next generation of farmers will come from?
I really do believe so. Part of it is because it's inherent in our culture to do agriculture. Down in rural Mexico, there's really no strong development, so agriculture is still the prime source of income. So we come with that background to the United States, and so naturally we immerse ourselves into ag here and learning how, and of course the next step after being a successful laborer or worker here in agriculture is to have your own business. So at ALBA, we try and aid that by training them and getting them into their own business and in the driver's seat.
Tony Serrano, General Manager for ALBA Organics. That's the Agriculture and Land-Based Training Association. Thomas Vang, we've asked to join into this discussion, too. He is with the Lau Family Community of Stockton, where he's with a project called Growing Connections. From Southeast Asia, Thomas Vang, walk us through, if you would, how your immigrant community is providing also part of the answer to where the next generation of farmers will come from.
Well, thank you very much for having me in the show. Again, my name is Thomas Wang. I'm the outreach specialist for the Growing Connection Project here at the Lau Family Community of Stockton. We have two offices. One is here in Sacramento, and the other one is in Stockton. We have just had this project this year, half of the year, in mid of the year, July 19, 2011, up to now. And we learned that since we have the project going on, there's a lot of Southeast Asian population are very enthusiastic about the project. We are new to the project, and also the community are also new to the project. And we have come and encountered a lot of people that are eager to do farming, but they still have problems on know how to do the farm in this country.
Thomas Wang with the Lau Family Community Project and Growing Connections. Thomas, if you would, can you turn down your radio also? We're getting a little feedback here on our end. Craig McNamara, do you see that as part of what can be helpful at this point, that while immigration is often a really contentious issue, that out on the farm fields, this is one place where perhaps that can change and also provide part of the answer to increasing the number of young farmers in the future?
Absolutely, absolutely critical. It's the greatest gift and challenge that we as Californians have. We are, in this city, I think the most diverse city in the state of in the United States. And so agriculture, as Tony said, we rely on the men and women who primarily have come from Latin America, Central America, to put the food on the table. And, you know, this is a big topic, immigration, hotly contested. It is probably the most important thing that we can solve in the next few years. And to bring the men and women who have put the food on the table for centuries and to elevate them so that they are farm owners and farm operators is one of the single most important things I think I can focus on.
We live in a time where there is great anxiety about our economy, about job prospects, about how people are going to make a living. Could you persuade people, Rich Collins, that if they're thinking about, if they have anxiety about where the jobs will be, that farming is part of the answer?
Absolutely. And here's my take on it. Being an endive grower, we've always had to be out in front of the public, explaining what we grow, how we grow it, why it's pronounced endive, not endive, things like that.
Consumers, like I did right before the show began. Yeah.
Yeah. Consumers are the suppliers of demand. And farmers are suppliers of food. But you have this engaged side now on the consumption side. These people want to know. They're interested about where their food comes from, how it was grown, who grew it, seasonality, local impacts. So there's this burgeoning possibility to have all this interest on the consumer side. So that just makes the supply side a little bit less risky and a little bit more rewarding.
It's really an interesting point. Whenever we do a program that's connected to food, it always gets a great response. There's high interest in this, but we don't talk enough probably about how that food comes to be, how it actually gets to people's table. We'll take this up when we come back. We're going to take a short break. We'd like to hear from you. Is this, if you're a young person, is this an appealing area that you'd like to learn more about? What questions do you have about it? What concerns you about it? What's promising to you? We'd like to hear your thoughts on this. If you're a farmer and you're concerned about where the next generation will come from, we'd love to hear from you as well. 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. Email us at kqed.org. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, farming in California and where the next generation of farmers will come from. The average age for a California farmer is nearly 60, but 20% of all California farmers are actually 70 and older. I want to get your thoughts on this topic. Is this if you're a young person, is this a career that appeals to you? If so, what would it take to get you there? If you're a new immigrant to California and you bring with you a farming background from Southeast Asia or from Central or South America, what do you need in order to be able to continue that profession in this country? You can join us at 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. You can go to our Facebook page or our website, add your comments there as well. Let's go first to Casey, who joins us in Sonoma. Casey, go ahead, please.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm really excited that you guys are having this conversation. I actually live here in Sonoma with my boyfriend, who is a full-time vegetable farmer at one of our local farms, Paul's Produce. And I'm a filmmaker, so I'm actually taking this year to make a film about him being a young farmer. And one of the things that I've noticed in your conversations, which I think is there in your conversation, which I think is true of a lot of farmers, I think it's just emblematic of their nature, is that they don't really talk about how hard it is. And I think the media also does this too. They paint a very rosy picture, and there are huge rewards of farming. You know, our vegetable is stocked with our refrigerator is stocked with vegetables right now, but something that people don't like to talk about are the hours and the low pay and the achy back and, you know, not being able to take vacation in the summer because you're working, you know, 60, 70, 80-hour weeks. And that's not to say that it's not made up for in other ways, but I think that it is an important aspect that a lot of farmers just, you know, they just go with the flow. They're farmers, so they don't talk about that as much.
Casey, thanks so much for literally bringing us back to earth on that point. Emma, you want to respond?
Yes, I would totally agree that it's incredibly hard work, and that anybody that doesn't like hard work, that's what it's all about. And our first year was Sasha and I just, you know, we did not take hardly any time off. We kept saying, oh, this winter, we're going to take some time off. And this winter, we're leasing the orchard from Rich, which is great, but we're starting to prune and manage the orchard, and we're not taking any time off. And I think that's something that young farmers need to figure out how to do. That's our goal, is to take one day off on a weekend.
Yeah.
This summer.
It's not an 8-to-5 job, Rich Collins. I mean, there's no way you can do that, right?
No, there's 168 hours in each week, and you learn to use them up pretty well, especially when you're farming, especially during the season. It's tough, but it's also so rewarding. I mean, there are some benefits to producing good food.
And is there a way you can bring control to life as a farmer so that you don't feel like you're on 24/7?
Well, Casey, it sounds like you and your partner are passionate about your film industry and your farming, and that's what it takes. And just my own personal experience is, as I started out as a truck farmer and worked, the learning curve is not a learning curve. It was a elevator mine shaft, and the mistakes that I made are innumerable. And I finally decided to become a walnut grower. Had no understanding of walnuts, didn't even know what a walnut tree really looked like. But I made that for definite reasons. And they were business-oriented, they were life-oriented, and I would encourage all farmers to find out within their passion of agriculture, what is it specifically that they want to do.
So give us an example. A, big mistakes that you made that young farmers ought to have their eyes open about. And then B, why walnuts?
Big mistakes will happen. I mean, over-irrigating Crenshaw melons cracks them. You can't market the melon. Taking a load of Crenshaw melons into the South San Francisco Produce Terminal. Now, remember, this was 35 years ago, and that's one of the things I wanted to bring up that Rich touched upon. Just think of where we are as a consumer-oriented nation today with Michael Pollan, Alice Waters, Joe Salatin, and many other writers and food critics. We have educated ourselves. We are informed. We're involved in the Farm Bill, which was an anarchistic sort of thing in the past. But the opportunities today are so abundant, and I think that Casey and Emma and others are taking advantage of those.
And why walnuts?
Walnuts because they are the healthiest food on this planet. They reduce your blood cholesterol by 12%. They're filled with antioxidants.
And you don't have to deal with refrigeration, right?
We do, actually.
Oh, okay.
But it's a one-year harvest operation. I have so much more control over my portion of the industry in walnuts than I did growing 25 different crops.
Sue in Berkeley joins us next and wants to be a farmer. Sue, go ahead.
Hi. Yes. I've been wanting to get into farming for a few years, and I'm one of those people who had a career and went back to school, got laid off, and the whole entire time I just am so interested, especially in how Emma put it, the connection between the land, the science, the details and the recycling and just sustainability issues, and also providing for community what is really needed. I mean, we so much need healthy food for everybody. And I just am wondering, the program that you mentioned, the training coming up, sounds like it's in the Davis-Sacramento area. I'm wondering how someone who is doing one of those second life careers or whatever, or third, could get into that. And then also if there's something here more in the East Bay.
Sue, thanks. Craig?
Sue, thanks so much for your call. Actually, the California Farm Academy, we've arranged it for people who have daytime jobs. So on Tuesday, Thursdays, evenings, and weekends will be our in-class training, and then at the conclusion of that, the in-field training. So a person like yourself definitely could qualify for it. In the East Bay, I'm not sure. Emma, Rich?
Like Alba?
Well, Alba would be in the Salinas area.
Yeah, so...
Tony Serrano, any other suggestions for Sue from what perhaps an organization like yours, the Agriculture and Land-Based Training Association, or other training opportunities for someone who's living in the San Francisco Bay Area?
You know, we've had people come up from as far as L.A. to do the training and actually became farmers and really went out to get that training. There is no other place up in the East Bay that I know of, aside from the one in Winters, but there is the opportunity to come down to Salinas. I mean, if that's something you would entertain, we also do it twice a week, and our students, of course, graduate into now. I believe it's an eighth of an acre or whatnot, but that's about.
Sounds like there are opportunities, but might take a little work to find them and a little bit of travel, Sue. But thank you for offering your interest in this and good luck in finding a place that can help you down the way with that. Let's hear next from Melissa in Sonoma, who also has an internship program, I think, to bring to our attention. Melissa, go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. I work at a farm in Petaluma called Green String Farm, and we have an amazing internship program that's 3 months long, running continuously 4 times a year. So the comment that I wanted to make was just that, I mean, I see about 12 to 15 people every 3 months coming through that program that, maybe only a handful of them are going to actually end up farming because the challenge is largely funding. But at least I see a good amount of young people interested in where food comes from so much that they're willing to spend 3 months learning about it. And I just think that that's really hopeful. I mean, that's 48 people or so a year.
Melissa, thanks. No, it does sound like there are lots of possibilities. Here's some people who have some very specific questions. This person writes in, I have a chance to get into farming. I'm in San Francisco. My background is in IT, but I want to make a change. I have access to 20 acres in Lake County with grapevines. What would be my next step in order to get into and learn about farming, both about wine, grapes, and other produce? So how do you begin that process? Rich Collins?
Well, walk the land, talk to neighbors, hang out at the local hardware store, tractor place, just make some contacts and ask people about the generalities of a specific area and the economics and some of the challenges that they've encountered through the years, especially the older folks. I mean, farmers are pretty generous with their knowledge. We like to share. We like to talk about our experiences, and we're fairly heartened, especially when a serious young person really wants to learn. I would say that that's a trait that's been passed down through agriculture for millennia.
What was the biggest lesson, I guess, that you've learned during this first year, Emma Torber?
I think, marketing. When people had always said, you have to learn about marketing, and I was like, well, I know about putting out advertisements, and I didn't quite realize how limited at least the farmers markets in the area for beginning farmers. And I think that is a major obstacle, is that the farmers markets a beginning farmer can get at, you can take home maybe $100 a day. And that's, full day's work and all the work you did growing all those vegetables and all the money you put into growing those vegetables. And it doesn't pencil out. And so that for us was like, oh, we didn't realize that was so limited. There are a lot of opportunities still. Like next year we'll be doing a CSA, a community supported agriculture. And those have actually been increasing quite a bit I think because you can directly reach the customer. So.
In the training that you offer, Craig McNamara, through your organization and the Farm Academy, is it equal parts sort of science and land as well as business and being entrepreneurial? I mean, because this is a profession where you've got to be – you have to have a variety of skills. It's not being smart about just one thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And we will stress that in our 6 months of classroom training. So we do want all the skill sets of strategic plans, business plans, which are very critical. And I can remember when I first got started, my family lives in the East Coast. So my dad would always be very frugal, and he would call at before 8 a.m. his time. Well, that was a little before 5 a.m. our time. And he'd say, well, how are the farm finances looking? I'd say, well, you know, Dad, let me get going here this day, and I'll give you an idea. But it's very critical. And being a good business person first is very good. Back to your San Francisco IT person who has 20 acres, Rich answered very, very correctly. I would also add the California Farm Link. They're doing great work in terms of connecting people to farms and farmers. Because I think what Rich said, we're here because we had a mentor.
We'll try to get some of these resources listed on our forum website. But is there a basic – is there a first – website that one should go to? Is there a clearinghouse for this people who are calling in and say, I want to learn more, I want to find out more? Is there a first stop that someone should go to?
I would say the Center for Land-Based Learning, which is our nonprofit, would be a great one. The also ALBA would be a fantastic one, and our one locally here in Sacramento would be a great one.
And Thomas Vang, for people who are new immigrants from Southeast Asia in particular and want to find out more about how to farm in this country, where would you direct people to go?
Well, as I said again, this is our first project in the Valley, and we just get to know the community. Our purpose to have this project is that we like to enlist the farmer, as you said earlier, that are now a day that farmers are ages. And we want to convince the young people to go for farming if they can. The second thing is that we like to do some education to the community to know how to conserve and improve the land, also to know how to use new technique in this country, that because everything here is involved with technology and new high tech. We have been teaching our community to know how to learn new stuff because nowadays that you go to the farmer's market, you will see mostly those Asians are doing the produce in the farmer's market. And our concern is also to have them know how to use fertilizer, pesticide, and do for the health and for the safety of a consumer. And we also like to have them go on and be self-sufficient because we have been here for so long and many people have been off from the public assistance and they have nowhere to turn to, and many of those people are looking to get farm. Currently, we have about over 100 people sign up to get land to do farming. Mm. We get hooked up with the Farm Links to help, and we also have the current the county USDA officer to come and help us to provide some education, some information on how to do. A lot of people that have come to us and asking to if they can make a little loan to do, because as you said earlier, farming is not cheap, and they really didn't know how to do. They were good farmers back home in Laos, but here they need to learn more, and I'm pretty sure that they would learn more. And our need here is that we like to be a long-term sustain to this farmer if we can, to help them be self-sufficient in the future if they can, and convince the young farmer to go on for the next farming generation.
Thomas Vang at the Lau Family Community Project, Growing Connections in Stockton. Is this are there things that California farmers, American native farmers, can learn from new immigrant farmers? Is this an arena where sort of there's an opportunity here? Just as we were talking about greater interest in food, is there a way in which there can be a sort of cross-cultural farming exchange? Rich Collins?
Yeah, you know, farmers, again, historically on an international level, I had the opportunity to be in Europe in 1982 for a year, and you walk onto a farm in France or Belgium or Holland, and there's just the common language. Even though you might not be speaking the same words, farmers, historically, wherever we are, we love to talk to each other and talk about technique and yields and things like that and challenges. And it is pervasive. Wherever you go in the world, farmers just absolutely, they just dream of those type of exchanges because they're so interesting.
And to Mark next in Atherton. Mark, go ahead.
Hey, hello?
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead, Mark.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I just wanted to contribute. It was a great discussion. This is my first time calling, and I wanted to say I'm 26 years old. I live in San Francisco, and for the last few years, I've been working towards building up a small business where we grow food for homeowners in the city. It was started as a result of thinking that, well, now 50% of the world's population live in urban areas, and with increasing water problems, one of the things that we could do as residents and citizens is try to go back to that idea of the Victory Gardens, where we're growing more of our food from right outside our backyards.
Thanks. It's some of what you were saying before, Craig McNamara, about not only smaller farms, but things near urban areas, that there are that farms and farming really come in all shapes and sizes, and that there can be different ways of pursuing this profession.
Absolutely. And Mark, thank you for what you're doing. It's exactly what I think we need to be focusing on. And there was a question earlier that came from one of your callers, Sue in Berkeley, I believe. Another resource that comes to my mind is the Pie Ranch, which is in the Peninsula, a great educational center where you can make that connection that Mark is working on.
Here's an email from Anna who writes in, I come from three generations of Iowa farmers. Only one of my mother's five siblings took up farming, and none of my siblings or cousins have become farmers. The main reason is because it's near impossible these days to compete with large corporate farming operations. I've been watching for years as my family has been crushed by the competition. How can new young farmers compete with large factory farms who can make their products for far less? Rich Collins.
Well, you have to, again, probably start small, not too overly leveraged. You have to be multifaceted in your talents, as we've discussed. And I think you also have to tell your story. And I'll go back to what I said earlier, is that happily there is a broadening consumer base out there that appreciates a good story. You know, not fluff, not slimy type stuff, but just good, honest dialect with the consumers about the food that you're producing.
And maybe it's not corn and soybeans, and it's coming at this a different way to fit that change in culture that you're describing.
Yeah, you do have to find your niche. That's for sure. You probably don't want to jump onto a bandwagon that's already pretty well occupied by a number of larger producers.
Craig McNamara.
Well, one of the things that Rich is doing on his farming operation at Bridgeway is finding great producers, creameries, locally produced foods and vegetables, Rich. Talk about that, because it is that niche that you have to find. It's my going from Cranshaw melons to walnuts.
Yeah, it's just so important because you've got to be able to sell this stuff. You've got to be able to market it effectively. You know, farmers historically are pretty good at producing. But in today's definition, I would say there's a required extension to say that a farmer is not just a producer, but a farmer is a marketer, a communicator, a distributor, all those things in that broad approach.
I have to read this email just because I love the subject line. It comes from Rebecca, and the subject line is Young Girls Farming Dreams. She writes, I've always wanted to be a farmer. As a kid, my mother enrolled me in 4-H. I experienced a lot of joy gardening, raising chickens, raising guinea pigs, cats. I followed my passion to get a bachelor's degree in biology, but was afraid to pursue farming directly because I don't have any family in farming. I don't have a gateway. So I'm so excited listening to this about the California Farmers Academy. So is that the gateway? I mean, we do tend to think, I know I tend to think of this as sort of, you know, comes from within families, like the woman who wrote in about Iowa. We have to expand the gateway, is that right? And find other ways in, not just by way of who your parents are.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of different ways that new farmers can start, and the Farm Academy is a great one. There's also a number of farms that offer apprenticeships. That's a great way to start as well. Just starting, too. I mean, people, if you have that idea, that's something that we learned. Rich definitely has made it much easier for us than it would be on our own. And so, but there are a number of landowners that you can find through FarmLink. And that for a long time in the Sacramento Valley, they were saying that there's no new farmers. There's all these farm opportunities, but there's no new farmers. And those farming opportunities, if you find a farm that wants a new farmer, It really makes it, you know, Rich provides us equipment. He has the pumps already there. All those large capital costs that we would need to buy on a new piece of land, we don't have to buy.
So finding a connection to someone like Rich Collins that you have is part of what can open up that gateway. And I should have read Rebecca's last line of her email, which is, does the California Farmers Academy address livestock farming? That's what she's particularly interested in.
Rebecca, that's a great question. And I must say that the funding that came to the Center for Land-Based Learning for a 3-year startup grant came through the CDFA specialty block grant, and it was specialty crops. So those are the fruits and vegetables of California. Specifically, our funding does not enable us this year to address animal culture, but we will, because the need is there and it's a great addition to any farmscape.
And let's hear next from Steve in Sonoma. Wants to talk about the Farm Bill. Steve, go ahead.
Right. Hi, I'm Steve Schwartz with the California Caucus of the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition, 11 groups in California working on the Farm Bill. One of the best things that people can do to support beginning farmers and their dreams is support the Beginning Farmer Rancher Opportunity Act, which is moving through Congress right now. We're thankful to Senator Boxer and Congressman Sam Farr for their leadership so far. We're trying to get other co-sponsors from members of Congress. So the best thing listeners can do is go to the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition website and learn a little more and call Congress and support that act. It'll bring support for the programs that you've been hearing about today, but also it'll give money and access to loans and other programs directly to beginning farmers.
Thanks, Steve, very much. Here's a question about water, which is timely given the drought that we're in at the moment. Hussam writes in, what about when you have droughts like this year and water is scarce? What do you do with your farm? How do you go about dealing with that part of the business, Emma?
Yeah, water is an interesting problem this winter. We haven't had it, and I think farmers expect there to be winter rains. We planted a field of barley that we didn't have the irrigation equipment for, expecting there to be some rains, and it's looking a little stunted, as well as the peaches. We're leasing peaches, nectarines, and apricots that we'll be selling at the roadside stand.
I mean, part of what you really have to assess when you're thinking about going into this profession is your ability to contend with unpredictability, right? I mean, you this is not something – if you're someone who wants guarantees, this may not be the profession for you, right, Rich? Yeah.
No, there is the weather element that we've yet figured out. You know, and being in a drought, I'd much rather be too wet. We can always let it dry out, but nobody's figured out how to make this stuff.
Here's someone who writes in, I'm 31 and have decided to make a career change from tech into farming. I've worked on farms in the past. I'll be a farm apprentice. But how do you deal with things like health insurance?
Health insurance is a really big issue, and that's actually why all four of our partners are all part-time, because we all have part-time jobs, and that's purely for health insurance.
And
I mean, well, we also like our jobs. But.
And that's very much the norm, isn't it, for young farmers in particular, that many still have to have other professions. You can't let go of something that's going to provide not only guaranteed income, but those sorts of benefits.
There is, the goal for farmers, I think, is usually to have it be a full-time job. And they're usually, in Pennsylvania, where I was apprenticing, there was subsidized farmer health insurance. Huh. So that is one option.
As a 61-year-old farmer, I'm married to the love of my life, and luckily she works for UC Davis.
Yeah. You started us out on the saintly spouse factor. That's something that probably is useful to remember in this as well. Let's hear next from Paul in San Francisco. Paul, go ahead.
Hi. I just want to give credence to how well California FarmLink works. How important it is to find an apprenticeship or find a mentor. So we started out learning how to farm chickens and went to farmers market with pasture-raised poultry. Then we struck a relationship up with Alba, Tony Serrano, good friend. And so for folks who want to get into farming, find a farmer to teach you and then use those available resources like California FarmLink to find a position. They helped us find two farms, and now we run Greenhearts Family Farm here in San Francisco, and we have a sustainable farming business. So we definitely used all the resources available to us. So real important to do that.
Okay, Paul, thank you. And again, we'll try to get some of these resources noted on our website. We don't have time to take your call, Mark, but I'm going to ask Craig for a quick response. Walnut farmer, how do you control squirrels?
Oh, squirrels. Well, we're organic, so think organic. We build owl boxes. Owls are tremendous raptors that take on our squirrel. And you may not want to hear this, and PETA may not want to know it, but we do have other techniques if you'd like to call me.
Okay. We just have a moment or two left. Fascinating discussion. Interesting, the response. Phone lines have been full throughout the hour. Lots and lots of email traffic as well, which is indicative of the interest that people have in this area. Couple of quick last thoughts. Rich Collins.
What struck me with the three farmers that you're talking to this morning, we're all first generation. So it's absolutely 100% doable.
And true also from Tony Serrano and from Thomas Vang as well, that it's possible to come to this country and continue that profession. Emma Torbert, a last thought from you?
Yeah, I definitely recommend, if you're interested in farming, you should go ahead and do it. The weather will always be interesting, but you really put yourself in the stream of life. You really embrace all its unpredictability and all the benefits that can come from that as well.
And Craig McNamara, I should also note that you recently won an award from the James Irvine Foundation for providing leadership in this arena, breaking through on tough issues. So your best advice on how to break through on tough issues.
Well, thank you, Dave. It's the most exciting time in my life. It's the most challenging in a farmer's life, but the opportunities as a farmer are the most that one could ever want. Thank
you. Craig McNamara, president of the California State Board of Food and Agriculture, joined us along with Emma Torbert, Rich Collins, Tony Serrano, and Thomas Vang. Thanks all very much for making us more aware of this profession and what is necessary to continue California's farming tradition. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Kevin Guillory, and Tina Lorberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Dan Zoll is our senior editor. Raul Ramirez, our executive producer. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.